Golf Smarter number 319, published on February 7, 2012, is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.
Are you sure you're ready to take the next shot? With Jim Waldron.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to Golf Smarter, Jim.
Thanks, Fred. Great to be back with you.
Great to be back. Man, great to have you back, as I've always said, if you're just getting into listening to Golf Smarter, you got to find what Jim Waldron has to say, because I always walk away from our conversations shaking my head like, wow, that was awesome. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it.
Yeah. You're traveling around the country. I caught you just before you, you're traveling around the world. I caught you just before, you know, your annual trek. You usually go to the east, you go, or west, you go to Hawaii, right? But now you're going even farther west to the far east.
Yeah, I'm leaving in a few days to an exploratory sort of groundwork research trip to Asia. I'm going to try to open up a golf school probably in Singapore as our main sort of new winter base. I'll still go to Hawaii for a couple weeks in December and for about 5 weeks in the spring. But my goal is next year from early January to about mid-April to be in Singapore. And to kind of draw from the surrounding countries. As you know, Asia is booming right now in terms of the golf community.
And the United States is not.
We're declining. Mm-hmm. And Asia is booming, not just economically, but the golf industry as a whole is booming over there. So that's what I'm leaving for in a few days to do. I'm kind of excited about it.
Have you ever been there?
I have. I did about 3 weeks, almost a month of teaching in Singapore a few years ago and really liked it.
Awesome. That's amazing. Well, listen, best of luck on that and safe travels, of course. What is it that you're trying to create when you go, like, say you're going to a whole new, not country, but culture, and you want to walk in and say, I have a golf school. How do you establish yourself? How do you generate business? And what is it that you offer that is not offered there already?
Well, and we've talked about this in the other podcasts I've done with you. You know, the sort of the methodology, the protocol I developed for teaching golf is very, very different than what I would call conventional or traditional golf instruction.
Right.
And I won't go through all those points. I mean, I'll just review it quickly. It's a mind-body connection approach. It's based on the idea that in terms of mechanical learning proper mechanics, it's your subconscious part of your brain, not the conscious thinking part of your brain that has to learn it, which means you have to use a whole different set of sort of basic concepts as a teacher to help the student's subconscious learn the material. So that's sort of the mind-body connection part. It's a very fast and very effective way of learning mechanics, better technique, in a very short period of time. And that seems to be, this is my 19th year of doing golf school, that seems to be the big selling point. We can talk a little bit about that and how that differs from, say, lessons, which certainly can work as well. I mean, obviously I do lessons as well. But, you know, I came up with the idea when I started my golf schools in 1995. I had been through some similar training programs over the years in other fields other than golf. And I knew that this total immersion concept, which was something that the U.S. State Department came up with back in the late 50s, early 60s, when they would send embassy personnel to posting to a new foreign country, they would have them learn the local language using total immersion language training in a very, very short period of time. People could attain kind of semi-fluency. And one of the main tenets is it's literally immersion. You live with a local family. No one is allowed to speak English to you. So it's sort of like that whole throw the baby in the pool and he has to learn how to swim. There's that aspect to it. you just have to sort of, you know, in total immersion, the students has to know beforehand what he or she is getting into. In an all-day training like that, whether it's golf or foreign language or whatever it might be, yoga, you know, martial arts. And that saturated learning environment creates massive insights, what we call epiphanies or light bulbs, right? Mm-hmm. When you have what I call a deep insight about some aspect of, say, golf swing mechanics, if it's really deep, it goes down deep into the neural networks in your brain, which connect how your brain works with your body, and your body can instantly start to do it closer to how a tour pro does it, literally instantly, within a few seconds. Now, I'm not saying it'll be at the level of habit formation. That takes, obviously, much more time on practice range or in front of a mirror doing slow motion training to make it habitual, a habitual movement pattern. But the initial tracks that have to be laid down are indeed in the brain / mind, subconscious mind. For example, how to cock your wrist properly in the backswing. If, you know, a lot of my new students don't know how to do that particular, to use one example, particular type of or piece of mechanics. They have an existing pattern that is wrong for all kinds of reasons. If we isolate that particular pattern for change, until they understand some particular specific aspects about that wrist mechanics motion, again, to that level of deep understanding, they're not going to see improvement. And so I always tell, when I give teaching seminars to fellow teaching professionals, I always tell people, look, your goal as a teacher should be to help your student have a massive supernova-like light bulb about whatever it is you're trying to change in his or her golf swing or chipping stroke or putting stroke. Because unless they have that sort of, at least approaching that somewhere in the ballpark, some level of deep insight, they're not going to change. They're going to go back and they're going to stay with whatever pattern they came to you with.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, that's the kind of feedback that I've heard multiple times about golf schools in general, is that people will go to a golf school, and upon arrival, they'll hear, oh, boy, we've got to change your swing completely. And they'll do a 2 or 3 day school, and by the end of the school, they're hitting the ball better, farther, with a different style of stroke and body position and grip, and everything has changed. And then they go home, and within, you know, they don't get to, you know, now that they've dedicated 2-3 days of golf, they can't immediately go right back to the range because life gets in the way. And now they start playing once a week again, once every other week. They get to maybe get a chance to hit a bucket of balls. But within a month, it seems to all be gone, and they're reverting back, as you said. They're reverting back to their original ways.
Right. Yeah, and that's because that type of conventional instruction, for the most part, is literally a Band-Aid type of approach. I mean, it's, you know, it's the very nature of the way that type of instruction is handed out almost guarantees that the learning won't stick. Because it is, they aren't teaching the person's mind in most cases directly, or they're teaching to the level of the intellectual mind only, which is just theory, right? Mm-hmm. And the basic sort of unquestioned premise is, if I get of what I would call most conventional instructors, if I give my student the proper theoretical information, even if it's the correct information, which it may not be because there's a lot of bad information out there, but even given that part, that is scientifically proven, you know, research tested, proven accurate information, let's say about, like you had Martin Chuck on a couple weeks ago, forward shuffling. That's an absolute, what I call, law of club motion. If it's only intellectual insight, which is very, very superficial by its very nature, it's not going to produce permanent improvement. Hmm. And so that's why, you know, in our golf schools, by contrast, we have we consider it a dialogue, like a Socratic dialogue between myself and my other assistant professionals and the students. And there's a give and take. There's question and answers. There's, you know, we're always saying to the student, do you understand what we're trying to get you to do? And if the answer is no, then we explain it another way. Maybe with a training aid, maybe we put our hands on and move their body in the proper position. However we do it, they have to get beyond purely theoretical understanding. And although theoretical understanding is certainly part of it, but, you know, I always tell people, theoretical understanding alone doesn't even get you in the ballpark. It's sort of like your house is 10 miles from the ballpark, and it gets you started in the general direction of north. That's all it does. Hmm. And the reason I say that, I get students all the time who have, especially lately with this proliferation on the web of golf swing technical information. I mean, the amount of knowledge of average golfers now, what used to be 20 years ago, maybe, you know, 20 people on the planet knew about the science of the golf swing.
Right.
There's literally millions of people all over the planet now who know this information. But the vast majority of those millions only know it to the level of theory.
Right.
And I get these guys and gals all the time. And so, you know, the sad truth is that does not really help very much. Again, it's definitely a baby step on a journey of 1,000 steps. But I can just give you one example. I had a student recently who came to me and said, literally in the morning, it was a private school, just one-on-one, him and I for 8 hours. Mm-hmm. He said he was I think he was a 17 or 18 handicap. He said, throw the book at me, Jim. I want to know everything about the golf swing model that you teach. I want to improve my ball striking. And I said, well, I can't show you everything in an eight-hour school. It would take me probably 3 or 4 days of 8 hours to show you everything, but I can show you a lot of it. But it may not improve your game very much, is what my response was. He goes, oh, no, I'm sure it will. I go, well, you know, there might be other ways other avenues we could work with other than showing you the total or even just the big pieces of the golf swing puzzle, right? Maybe we should work more on a swing corrective approach where we can just sort of find two or three of your really big flaws and do lots of drills all day long on those two or three things to where you really get to some significant improvement that will be both short-term and long-term. We can back it up with some fundamental training, not just the swing corrective. He said, no, I really want to learn the model. So, we'll start out. So I watched him hit some balls, and it became apparent to me very quickly that he wasn't striking it like a 17 or an 18 handicap, not even close. Probably more like a 25 or a 28 handicap in terms of ball striking.
Yeah.
And there was so many sort of basic level fundamentals in terms of grip pressure, setup, ball position, aim, that he was so far off on. I'm thinking, well, why would he want to know all this technical information about the complex parts of the swing when he's never even learned the most basic ABCs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in a very gentle way, I sort of said that to him. I go, let's start with aim. I go, aim at that flag out there 100 yards, 120 yards away. So he's got a 7-iron in his hand. He's aiming at this flag 120 yards away. Now, if he hits it good, it'll go over the flag. It wasn't for distance control. It's purely for aim. And he aimed consistently. I had him do it 3 times, 30 yards to the right of the flag. 30 yards to the right of your target from 120 yards away is awful.
Awful. Well, and I'm curious.
You know,
so when he did he go through a pre-shot routine, or did he just stand up at the ball?
No.
And
no, he had no routine.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of what my point is. He didn't have a grip. He didn't have even close to a fundamentally sound grip. He was gripping it almost as tight as he could grip it, so his grip pressure was off the charts too strong. He was aiming, in other words, in about 12 fundamental, which are fairly non-technical, pretty simple. You don't need any understanding of science or geometry or physics, right? Which is what he wanted. He wanted the technical stuff. He was completely missing the bedrock, relatively simple to understand fundamentals, like how to aim the club face properly at your target, how to get the ball position. His ball position was about at least two or three ball positions, ball widths, too far back in his stance. So I put it where it should be for that club, which is, for most people, a 7-iron should be right in the middle of your stance, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when I put it there to him, he said, well, you put the ball off my left toe. And I said, no, it's not off your left toe. It's directly in the middle of your stance. He goes, Jim, I'm telling you, I'm looking at it. It's off my left toe. Now, I could give you example after example, but this went on for most of the day, and it was a very frustrating experience for him and for me. Finally, about 3:30, which is about 2.5 hours, we went from 9 to 6, he finally broke through and started basically accepting my coaching and not fighting me, because this was an example of someone whose level of self-knowledge about his own golf game was off the charts terrible.
But he felt like he had a complete understanding because he's been on the web and he's watched every YouTube video he could find. And he's
exactly.
like, and he's arguing, he's like, well, wait a minute, so-and-so said this.
Yeah, not only that, because his mind was so wrapped up into thinking theory, but he literally didn't have accurate sensory feedback as to something as simple as where the ball actually was in the stands. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, as soon as I put a mirror down in front of him, since he wasn't trusting my feedback, he almost fell over because you could clearly see from looking in the mirror that the ball was exactly in the middle of the stance, right? But when he looked away from the mirror and looked at the ball directly from his vision, he saw the ball off his left toe.
Hmm.
Right? When I had him put a club down to show that he was aiming 30 yards to the right, right? We had to put a club down first to where the target line actually was, to where the flag was. Then I had him set up with a 7-iron. I literally held the 7-iron and held the club at so it wouldn't move when he let go of it. He walked behind me, looked over my shoulder and saw his 7-iron club face angle 30 yards to the right of where the shaft on the ground was pointing to the actual target. It took that level of concrete feedback to convince the student that his basic sensory feedback as to what was objectively occurring in his golf swing was completely flawed. He had no idea.
Mm.
Right?
Mm.
So I think that's a big issue. I mean, you know, teaching is an art. It's not a science. Information about the golf swing can indeed and should be science-based. So the teacher needs to know the scientific information. But how the teacher doles out that information is an art. In other words, you can give people the wrong information. Not that it's wrong in the sense where it's literally scientifically invalid. It should be the right information scientifically. But it could be the wrong information for that student at that point in their evolution as a player.
Well, I think that's one of the things why I enjoy speaking to you so much, because I think you are an excellent communicator.
Well, thank you.
And I think that you are able to get the information out and succinctly and be able to make it understandable.
Can you say that again? Because I want to record this so I can play it back for my wife.
I am recording it, yeah. And she could hear it right here on the Golf Smarter podcast. And if she's not listening already. No, I said you're an excellent communicator to your students. I didn't necessarily say to your spouse. And that's a whole other podcast we can get started on. Listen, before we move on, you know the drill here, that this episode of the Golf Smarter podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. The Internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles all across all types of literature, featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. Audible would like to provide Golf Smarter listeners with an opportunity to try a Audible book for free. A free audiobook of your choice from their enormous library. Jim, you actually wrote to me a few months ago and said, got to look into emotional intelligence. And we did promote that in January, so I'm going to hit you again.
Oh, excellent.
Any books that might be that will be on Audible that you can recommend so someone could try on their own?
Any books regarding golf, you mean?
No, not necessarily. What have you been reading?
You know, I haven't been reading much. I've been trying to finish these two golf books. I've been more writing. I got to be honest, I can't think of anything off the top of my head on the golf side. I know that, you know, I think we've talked about, what's the name of the book? The Talent Code before,
mm-hmm.
which is excellent.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one as far as learning. There's one called, I believe it's called Deep Practice.
Let me look that one up.
About the Russia, it's mainly about the Russian tennis program. And you know, the reason I have students read that is because it talks in detail about the effectiveness of super slow motion training in front of a mirror. That's a good one.
Doesn't look like it's an audio book. Deep practice.
Yeah.
Let's try something else here.
Talent Code probably is. The Talent Code was number one in the New York Times nonfiction.
Yeah, no, but we promoted that. We've already.
Oh, you did?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. You sent it to me, and I said, you know, Jim told us to talk about this, but so we need to, you know, we can even do the Steve Jobs books if you want, but and everyone's talking about like you've got to read the Steve Jobs book.
Yeah,
but
that's right.
But so you've been, and how well? We'll get into the book that you're writing, but we need to finish talking about. Audible and what they offer. Nothing? You got nothing today? Come on.
I really can't think off the top of my head.
All right, let's look at the New York Times bestsellers and see if there's anything that might be of interest to, let's see, in self-development. I'll look in.
Oh, I know one.
Okay. Raise your hand,
again,
please.
On the same
I got one.
Um, I might mangle the title, but I believe it's Slow Practice Will Get You There Faster.
Slow Practice.
Also about slow motion training.
Let's see. I'm just going to put in Slow Practice and see what we can find here with this one. Nothing.
Okay.
That was a good try. Yeah. Okay. Well, we've given them way too much time here, so we're just going to go ahead and say Steve Jobs by Walter Isaacson is our recommendation. And that one, everyone's been going nuts about this book. I was even at a business networking group recently, and they said, if you're in business at all for yourself, you have to read this book. Steve Jobs by Walter Isaacson is the pick. So if you would like to get that book for free, you haven't read it yet, then all you have to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. That's AUDIBLE, audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter, and sign up today and get the free book of your choice, and maybe it's going to be the Steve Jobs book. Okay. Now, we've given them plenty of time. Let's move on. There's a couple things that we were going towards here, and I'm actually fascinated about aiming the club face. I want to pick on that for just a moment.
Sure.
I have never been able to, nor do I understand how to put draw on my ball fades and sometimes way beyond a fade. It goes, hard right. I don't understand. Is the way I place my club face at address have any impact on putting draw on the ball?
It can. It's not the only factor, but it's one factor, yes. It may not start where you want it to go, though. That's the problem. The old way of doing it, which, by the way, does work because Hogan did it this way, Nicklaus did it this way, Faldo still does it, I believe, this way. Uses what some people refer to as the old ball flight laws. Mm-hmm. And I have a problem with that, sort of a misnomer, because, they're not really correct. They're not accurate, the old laws, which is why the people who criticize them call them old as opposed to new laws. Mm-hmm. But in spite of the fact that they describe the physics of impact exactly backwards, you could still draw the ball or fade the ball on purpose using them. The old laws... and by the way, these old laws were not absolute. In other words, the basic idea in the old law was that the club face angle creates the curvature, the hook or the slice, and the club head path, the direction you're swinging the club head through impact on, whether it's on plane or perpendicular to the target line of the impact, or out to the right of the target line of the impact, or to the left of the target line of the impact. That's called the path. The old law was that the path creates the starting line direction. Now, in reality, it's exactly reverse. The club face angle creates 80% of the starting line direction. The path creates 20% of it. And all of the curvature is caused by a differential between the path and the club face angle. So, in other words, if the club face angle is at 0 degrees relative to the target line, perpendicular to the target line, and the club head path is at 0 degrees to the target line, at the moment of impact, then the ball will go dead straight without any curvature on it. Mm-hmm. But if I have the club face at 0 degrees and I swing, say, 10 degrees in to out, right, it's going to start pretty straight, a little to the right with a little bit of a draw on it. In other words, the bigger the difference in degrees between the path and the club face, the more curvature will be. And when the club face angle is pointing to the left, or closed to where the path is, you're going to put hook spin on the ball. And when the club face angle is pointing to the right of the path, you're going to put slice spin on it, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have, for example, a 20-degree differential between the path and let's say the face angle was 20 degrees pointing to the left of the path, right? No matter what the starting line direction, doesn't matter. The starting line direction could be straight. It could be to the right of the target line. In this case, it would be to the left because the face angle is 20 degrees shut. But the point is, whatever the differentiation is, the bigger the difference, the more it's going to curve.
And you're saying swing path.
The bigger the difference the path and the face angle, those are two separate parts of what happens
during
impact.
But when you say path, you meant the swing path, correct?
Well, it doesn't matter. It's the difference between the two, right? Uh-huh. If you have the path going one way and the face angle pointing in the opposite direction, you're going to put curvature, right?
Yeah.
It's going to curve to the right if the face angle's pointing to the right of where the path is pointing at impact. It's going to curve to the left if the face angle's pointing to the left of where the path is at impact. Does that make any sense?
No.
Think about how if you wanted to put slice spin or backspin on a tennis ball or a ping pong ball, for example.
Right. Okay. That concept I understand.
It's exactly the same with a golf club in your hand. It's no different.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So in other words, if you wanted to curve the ball, you could curve the ball by simply doing nothing to change the relationship of your club face angle, which, you know, in a straight shot, you want to have your club face angle be determined square to the arc of the path. So whatever path you're using, and ideally should be pretty much what we call on plane, you know, not way into out through impact, which would be a push, again, assuming the club face angle was square to the arc of the path, or the opposite, out to in, over the top, out to in, pull. If your swing shape was pretty much on plane and your club face angle stayed square to the arc of the path, because the club is moving in an elliptical shape arc, right, at all times, because you're rotating your body, right?
Right.
But you can independently, using the muscles in your wrists and forearms, you can rotate the face angle close to the path, which is pointing to the left, or open to the path, which is pointing to the right. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that will affect both the starting line direction and the curvature. Just by doing that alone, you can change both. You could also deliberately choose to swing way into out, which will tend, not guaranteed, to make you hook the ball. Or you could deliberately swing way out to in, which will tend to make you slice the ball. In other words, you could alter the curvature by working primarily on the path or by working primarily on the face angle. Or, third way, a blend of both.
And what would be more preferable, hitting the ball straight or putting it on a curvature to it, going as for a right-handed hitter, right to left, or left to right, or a backspin?
It's a matter of preference. Well, you're going to get more backspin on a cut shot, on a slice, and less backspin on a draw or a hook, right? So my players, I work mainly with average golfers. I do work with some pros, but mainly average golfers. And for the average golfer, they need more distance. Mm-hmm. And so the shot shape that I teach most of my average golfer students is a slight draw, with all of their clubs starting around a 6-iron, 5 or 6-iron, all the way through driver. And the longer the club, the more of a draw. So they might draw it somewhere between 5 and 10 yards with their driver, and they may only draw a yard, 1 to 2 yards with a 6-iron.
Mm-hmm.
If they have cavity back game improvement clubs, which most of my students do these days, starting right around a 7-iron, they're going to go with the shot pattern I'm teaching them, with the swing shape I'm teaching them, the ball won't draw. It'll go pretty, or maybe very little. It'll basically go straight from about a 7-iron to a lob wedge. If they play with 4-inch blades, it'll still draw a little bit. Maybe not a lob wedge or a sand wedge, but starting on a pitching wedge, they might get a little baby, you know, 1-yard draw if they play with 4-inch blades, because they curve the ball more easier. Game improvement clubs are designed not to curve the ball.
Mm.
Yeah.
They're just to get you to hit it straight.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're designed so if your face is a little open, especially, it'll still go well. It won't produce a big slice. It'll go straighter, just a little baby fade. That's kind of how they're built.
And the game improvement clubs, you're referring to cavity back clubs mostly.
Yeah,
as opposed to blades.
Bigger heads with the big space, a lot of bottom weighting, a lot of offset in the hosel.
Mm-hmm.
Those are designed for people who tend to leave the face open relative to the path, which is the vast majority of amateur golfers. So they're designed for people who slice. That's why most good players have the opposite problem. Most good players tend to, the worst miss tends to be a hook. And it tends to be a specific type of hook, what we call a push hook, which means it starts out to the right a little bit because they swing a little bit into out on their path, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll oftentimes swing a lot into out, good players. So with a slightly closed club face, so the club face is pointing, even though it's closing, it's still pointing to the right of the target line at the moment of impact. So they hit this shot that starts out maybe, you know, 10 degrees to the right of their intended target line, and it hooks 20 degrees over to the left, and they miss the green to the left. And that tends to be a better player's type of shot, where they come in slightly from the inside or even a lot from the inside, swing to the out, across the target line, out to right field, so to speak, with too much right-to-left curvature. And so forged blades, or the better player, small cavity back clubs, are designed for that player to offset the tendency to hook the ball. Hmm. Yeah.
As I like to say, your time is up today.
you can make it a two-parter if you want.
Your session is up. Would you mind if we continue recording? We'll do a Golf Smarter for members only. We'll keep going?
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, yeah,
sure. Well, so for everybody who's not a Golf Smarter member and you've been intrigued by this, maybe you should be joining Golf Smarter for members only so you can hear part two of this conversation with Jim Waldron of the Balance Point Golf Schools. Jim, give your website address again, please.
BalancePointGolf.com.
Okay, there you go. Jim, we'll be talking to you again on the next episode. Thank you for agreeing to do that.
You bet. Thanks, Fred. Thanks for having me back.
I hope you now know why Jim has always been one of my favorite instructors to have on the show. His knowledge, his approach, and mostly his ability to communicate. Coming up on the next episode, which is for members only, Jim and I speak for another 40 minutes. What's the three things that most of his students want out of lessons? Distance, accuracy, and consistency. Have you ever heard that one before? Well, we discuss it all, which requires the most work, and which is the most important. But to hear it and gain access to every conversation I've ever had with Jim, along with 300 more interviews, please do your part to keep our listener-supported podcast going. Join Golf Smarter for members only today at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.